Deep scarification should be done properly, so to remove superficial part of skin until bleeding appearing. This is proper sample for Demodex. If you are looking for Sarcoptes, then in this case you should do it superficial scarification, so not blood to appear.
Hello, thank you for joining us at Vet Dialogue Podcast. I'm your co-host, Tamsin Mohammed, senior vet med student. I'm so eager to welcome you, Dr. Bain, and thank you for being here.
You're very welcome. Nice to meeting you, and I'm happy to be here as well.
I'm super excited to talk with you about veterinary dermatology, because as we know, dermal issues are important, especially in our area in the GCC. But before we go through it, Dr. Bain, would you please tell us where you're from and give us a little bit of background about you?
I'm from Serbia. Serbia is a country in Southeast Europe. I have graduated at Faculty of Veterinary Medicine on University of Belgrade. I graduated now 20 years ago. After graduation, I did my internship in mixed practice in my hometown. Worked in few different mixed and small animal practices. And since 2003, I worked for 12 years in one specialty small animal clinic in Novi Sad, city on the north of Serbia. And then in 2015, I moved to Dubai, to Zabil Veterinary Hospital.
That sounds really interesting. Sounds like you have a really great life. Were you like those who wanted to be a veterinarian ever since they were a child? Or did you just find that out after high school?
I was always curious about animals, you know, collecting them from the street and give them food, provide some basic care. But actually, I have decided to become a vet in early my graduation. So I spent a lot of time on my grandpa's small farm during my elementary and high schools, but the idea about veterinary medicine actually came to my mind, I think, in final year of high school. So actually I had a dilemma, maybe dentistry or veterinary medicine. Then I decided that it's going to be veterinary medicine, but somehow I'm still now connected with dentistry during my regular working flows.
Yeah, I realize it's always little things in our early life that we don't seem to realize. So why don't you tell us more about why you're especially interested in dermatology and what makes veterinary dermatology so different?
Okay, so firstly, dermatologists, I discovered during my practice that dermatology diseases are very common in everyday practice. And I realized that I don't have enough knowledge from regular basic studies. So then I started to investigate it more just to be able to help our patients more. And somehow I felt that dermatology is one really nice topic. It's like detective work. So sometimes you have very, very straightforward diagnosis, but sometimes actually need digging, need a lot of investigations, need to combine practical work and to use previous knowledge, previous experience to make proper diagnosis.
Okay, hearing you talk makes me want to change my mind about studying dermatology. But I was wondering, in the daily practice, what is the most common dermal disorder that comes to the clinic?
Based on my Dubai experience, what is definitely different than European regarding dermatology cases, I meet and I see a lot of dermatophytes in cats. We see a lot of ear mites in cats and definitely a lot more canine atopic dermatitis in dogs. Back in Europe, I had a lot of cases with fleas and flea-related allergies, a lot of Demodex cases, and atopy as well. I have more opportunity there to work with different breeders and with many, many different breeds. So this way of treatment very often included treatment of whole litter, for example. For example, what is not the case in the Middle East, especially in Dubai.
I find it interesting how it differs depending on the geographical locations. I would love to hear from you. What is atopic dermatitis?
Canine atopic dermatitis is a big topic, and we can talk about this one whole interview, for example, if you're interested in it. Shortly, and for your listeners, I can just remind them that this is one inflammatory pruritic skin disease that occurs in genetically predisposed animals. This is one disease what must be diagnosed based on patient history, based on clinical signs, but not with serologically or skin allergy test. What I see that it's one common mistake and common thing what many colleagues do without actually making proper diagnosis. Shortly to add to this, there is one genetically problem. It means that skin barrier is not proper one, as in animals, but they don't have this genetic predisposition. So external allergens can pass skin barrier and cause this inflammatory reaction. There are some criteria for atopic dermatitis as well. Mostly, canine atopic dermatitis will appear before 3 years of age. Mostly it's happening in indoor animals or mostly indoor living animals. This kind of disease is very, very responsible to glucocorticosteroids. Pruritus is one of first signs. If you are talking about location, then front feet are affected, then ear pinnae are affected, but ear margins are not affected. And mostly dorsolumbar area is unaffected. If any dog has at least 5 of these, we can be pretty, pretty sure that this dog has canine atopic dermatitis.
It's so fascinating hearing you talk about it. I have another clinical question. How do we diagnose seborrhea in dogs and cats?
Seborrhea is also one big topic. There are actually 2 kinds of seborrhea. Seborrhea could be primary and secondary. Just to go back to definition, this seborrhea refer to abnormal flow of sebum from sebaceous glands. But actually, when we are talking about seborrhea, we are talking about disorder of keratinization. So keratinization refer to on normal process when leaving basal keratinocytes of the epidermis are transformed into dead keratinocytes, actually corneocytes. This process in normal dogs takes approximately 3 weeks. And as a result of this, we have some very mild presence of scales. In disorders, when the production of these scales is abnormal, then we can talk about seborrhea. As I said, seborrhea could be primary or secondary. To make diagnosis of primary seborrhea, we have to exclude all possible reasons for secondary seborrhea. And you really need to do proper investigations because reasons for secondary seborrhea in dogs could be related to parasitic diseases, to allergic diseases, to idiopathic, to nutritional, to infections, to endocrine diseases. So once when you rule out all of these diseases, treat them and be sure that you fix it, and there is no improvement, then you can go and investigate, actually treat primary seborrhea.
You've just told us about 2 big topics in dermatology. Well, skin allergy is also a huge term, and it is such a headache for vet and pet parents. Could you tell us more about it?
Yes, skin allergies are really huge topic. I mentioned already about canine atopic dermatitis. In general, there are 3 big groups of allergy. First one, which is not so common in this part of the world, are fleas allergies. Then we can talk about food allergies. And last one, already mentioned, atopy or canine atopic dermatitis. Flea allergies are just hypersensitivity to flea bites, actually to fleas saliva. Biggest difference between flea allergy and other allergies, because it's location of this problem is mostly dorsolumbar part, and we can see different clinical appearance, different skin lesions, primary, secondary lesions, and very often treatment is final. Final in terms of when you neutralize fleas and when you fix secondary complications, you can consider that dog is healed. What is more difficult in other two kinds of allergy, food and canine atopic dermatitis, because they can go together. And really one detailed and deep investigation should be done to clarify and to differentiate, is it food allergy, is it atopic dermatitis, or maybe even both. There is one more kind of allergy. This is contact allergy dermatitis. It is usually appear on parts of the body where in contact with some corrosive or aggressive, or even not aggressive, but allergic provoked materials. So in this case, we are talking about contact allergy dermatitis.
I knew skin allergy was a huge topic, but just not like that. Well, let's move on to another topic. Ectoparasites or external parasites in dogs and cats are dangerous, but just how much danger do they cause? And are they considered a threat to the pet's life?
Some of them, yes. But mostly what we see in the regular practice are fleas, for example, Sarcoptes, Demodex, Otodectes. We see a lot of ticks as external parasites here. They don't cause particular and very severe skin lesions, but ticks can cause very severe systematic diseases in both dogs and people. So in dogs, let's say in this Mediterranean part, there is one disease called babesiosis, caused by Babesia canis, which is very acute, very aggressive, and severe, deadly disease. Luckily, for these 6 years, I still never seen here, but we see a lot of ehrlichiosis, we see anaplasmosis in my clinic. It's very important to know that ticks can transmit, is also very serious and difficult to treat Lyme disease in people.
Some of these external parasites you mentioned are zoonotic external parasites. So would you kindly mention the common ones and their transmission as well as their lesions in humans?
Yes, so fleas are most common. Fleas are small parasites, and if they have to choose between us and our hairy companions, that they will choose them for sure. But if it's really overpopulation, or if you are in close contact with your dog and or cat, then in this case it can happen that fleas will affect our skin as well. In this case, we can see not very severe, but very itchy lesions. Those could be like erythema papulas, very itchy, and usually it's coming like three most of the time. Another parasite what is transmissible from our patients to us is actually Sarcoptes. Sarcoptes is very itchy parasite, causing severe pruritus in both dogs and cats. Similar skin lesions can appear in people as well, mostly in areas of what have been in contact with your pet. When we are talking about this area, we are talking about zoonosis, and it's not parasite, but fungal disease, dermatophytes or ringworm, probably very known to all of our colleagues, is zoonosis, and this is something what we see on daily basis. So this ringworm is maybe the most common skin zoonosis in my practice, what I see on daily basis.
You sound very experienced. So from your experience, could you give us tips and tricks in dermatological sampling, and what mistakes should we avoid?
Okay, so whenever you face some skin lesion, you should first go for one proper history, asking for detailed history taking from the owner to realize for how long this is present, to realize is it already treated, to realize effects of some previous treatment. So once when you have all these details, like age of animal, because those are different diseases in young puppies and older dogs, you should make a list of few differential diagnoses. When you have this list, then you know what kind of investigations, what kind of tests these diseases needed. So usually, and I like to do a lot of this kind of quick, relatively cheap, but very informative test in the clinic on daily basis, such a deep and superficial scarification, impression, scotch tape impression, hair shaft collection, just simple white paper testing, combing, ear material collection. So for every of these tests, those are very simple, but you just should practice them and do it on daily basis. And then after, I cannot say a few years, but after many, many times of repeating, depends how your clinic is busy, you'll get some routine. So for every of them, there are some rules. What can I tell? So if you are looking for Demodex, then you should go for deep scarification. Deep scarification should be done properly, so to remove superficial part of skin until bleeding appearing. So this is proper sample for Demodex. If you are looking for Cercoptes, then in this case, you should do it superficial scarification, so not blood to appear, because in this case, you'll miss it, Cercoptes, because he doesn't live in these deeper structures. For example, for if you face and if you have doubts about any hormonal disorders, in this case, you should go for blood collection. Sometimes even you do, in more difficult cases, biopsy. All of these procedures should be done in some particular way, but some of them in particular time. Because, for example, testing for Cushing requires application of corticosteroids and blood collection every 4 hours, 3 times. So you should plan in advance to do proper testing. This is also a very interesting topic, and also one, let's say 1 hour or maybe more can be dedicated only for sampling.
Okay, so a dermatologist seems like he has a lot of work to do. So when we're talking about skin issues, when should the pet be taken to a general practitioner, and when should he or she be taken to a dermatologist?
Okay, so I think that probably every owner has already his own general practitioner who visits on whenever it's needed, actually. So I think that owner is not this one who should decide about it. General practitioner, actually, this veterinarian who take care about this dog from the early beginning should know actually what is this, or at least, to be fair, if he doesn't know what is this, then to transfer to specialist. In general, general practitioners see patient and for the first time, and when they see this lesions at the beginning, it's very important to not mask symptoms, to not make some treatment that might work, might not, and then to change primary clinical appearance, what's going to be more difficult for second or third vet to check. So decision is on the vet. General practitioner should decide based on the case, can he manage? And if yes, of course, go for it. But if not, then at least to not make additional damage and to send to other colleague.
I have a question that I'd like to ask you. Regarding client expectations in dermal treatment, are they usually patient enough to treat their pet for a long time?
It really depends. It depends on patient condition. It depends on owner's attitude, finance, time. So I see a lot of really dedicated and passionate owners, and they are ready to do everything for their pets. But from the other side, some owners are not so dedicated. They often don't show up. They stay at home and they just send their dog or cat to us without even explaining to driver or maid what is the problem, what is really, really big problem, especially in dermatology. Because I told you already that we have to do proper investigation, to ask a lot of questions. And if someone is not physically present, then we really, really struggle to make proper diagnose, to make proper treatment, and to help this animal. So it really depends sometimes, and we are used already for these situations, and we manage some of these diseases if they are simple, if tests will tell me everything, but very often you have to ask owner for different approvals, for it is related with finances as well, so it depends.
Well, for all kinds of pet owners out there, would you give them 5 pieces of advice regarding dermal care?
Yes, so I would advise to not over-groom their pets. This is one often topic. Very often they're coming and they said, yes, we do bath every week, or we do bath every 3 days, or they do this kind of approach like for kids. Pets are not humans. Unless they are not dirty or stinky, no need to bath them. So especially I don't advise to use very aggressive and very strong chemicals. Shampoos, human shampoos are not adequate for them. If it's stinky, yes. But if dog is regularly stinky, even without proper reason, this could be sign of some disease. And this is a reason to visit a vet. Second advice is when a problem appears, to not treat by themselves, but to go to the vet. If they have long-haired dogs and cats, to brush them daily. This could be very helpful in terms of hygiene and will prevent a lot of additional hair matting and knots, what later on should be just shaved. To not use strong perfumes, to not use perfumes at all for dogs and cats, and maybe not directly related with skin, but for general health condition, including skin, is to feed their animals with proper and balanced food, because if food is proper one, then skin will be healthy and shiny.
Moving away from pet owners to veterinary dermatologists, in your opinion, what are the elements of a successful veterinary dermatologist?
I would say first, it's a patience. So dedication to ask, to listen, to ask for every single details, to ask owners even something what they don't realize that this is important for this case. This is our task. So we should investigate, we should ask. There are a lot of different forms with already prepared questions. So feeling this dermatological form is very important, and it will give you one wider picture about this patient. So then to make list of differentials, then to start treatment, knowing and keeping in mind to not making worse, because if you make worse, then it's difficult to go back to original condition. If you start treatment, do it first to not harm. And if everything of this is not working, then you can start from the beginning. So it means you miss something, you skip some detail, or you fail in treatment, or rather you go back to from the beginning, or you transfer to someone who is, let's say, more interested and more specialized in this topic. Of course, constant learning, updating with new products, courses. We see that dermatological industry is very big topic, and we have very often new products, new medicines, new food. If someone really likes to be more into dermatology, I would advise one good microscope and learning about microscopical interpretations, and always to make follow-ups. So dermatological patient is very often requires follow-ups, checkups, modification of treatment. And this is something that you cannot do it if you just give treatment and tell him, yeah, provide this and come whenever you want. No, we should make schedule, and we should make them motivated to do all of this, because this only way how you can make proper treatment is when you have motivated owner to provide all your ideas.
You're absolutely right. Motivation is the key. Last but not least, we would love to hear from you. What advice would you give to the Arabian veterinary practice community?
Firstly, I would like to say hi to all of them, to wish them success, and if I can give some advice, is actually to be objective with yourself. So all of us, when we start, we are just like open books, and we would like to help to every animal with every disease, but the reality is something different. And mostly we don't have this knowledge and experience when we are young and still not experienced. So just constant learning, constant improvement of our knowledge, talking to more experienced colleagues will make benefits. After a few years of experience, I think it's very useful and good to choose some of specialty, because you cannot be doctor for everything and every organic system. So in this case, I feel good and I enjoy and let's say show more interest in dermatology, but you can choose dentistry, cardiology, endocrinology, whatever makes you, whatever you feel that it's your topic, this is the best combination. So when you're interested in something, then you'll get the biggest effect of it. So spend as much more time in the clinic you can, especially this is, let's say, advice for younger colleagues, because this is the place where you'll learn the most. Update your knowledge, go online courses, workshops. Now this is very, let's say, available, and it's really good to find out something new.
We can talk about dermatology all day, but the information you gave us today is worthy of a lifetime. We appreciate your presence here, and I'm certain we will have other conversations with you, sharing more of your invaluable experience.
You're very welcome, and thank you for this opportunity. Hope I'll hear you again.
Thank you, Dr. Bain, for your time today, and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Rate and review, and we would appreciate it if you gave us all the stars. Follow us on our social media platforms at Vet Dialogue, and thank you once more.